You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Hi there, my name is Eleanor and I am the host of Femme Concept on CITR Radio, and you are tuned in now to International Women's Day on CITR. CITR broadcasts from the unceded Musqueam territories at the University of British Columbia. Today is March 8th, International Women's Day, and to celebrate this, CITR is broadcasting 18 hours of content by and about women, femmes, trans, queer, two-spirit, intersex, and genderqueer folks. Historically, these voices have been kept out of the media, and because of this, we think it's incredibly important to hold them up, make space for them, and celebrate them as much as possible. I'm joined today by a very special guest, Sam Nock. Sam is a Cree Métis poet and writer from Northern BC who currently resides in Vancouver. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, I should also say that Sam is one of my friends.
That's true. It's true about me.
So I first saw you perform poetry just about a year ago at a fundraiser at Heartwood Cafe. And since then, I've wanted to ask you to come record some poetry and chat about poetry with me here. So I'm very excited.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited too.
Cool. Is there anything else that you want to add about your background or your history with writing?
Yeah, before we start? So like you said, I'm Cree Métis. I grew up in Treaty 8 territory in northeastern BC, but my family actually comes from a small Métis community in northern Saskatchewan called Aldecross or Sagittawuck in our language. And a lot of my poetry is influenced by being from Aldecross, but never actually being there or growing up there, and living and growing up in the Peace region.
Great. So when did you first start writing poetry?
When I was really little, actually, I used to write really embarrassing poems, like, I don't know, just really dumb stuff that my family likes to frame and put on the wall.
Yes.
It's so embarrassing.
It's still
but
there now.
I started super, super little.
Nice. What inspired you to start? Do you remember?
My dad's actually a poet. He is this kind of funny, really burly mechanic, but then he writes this really beautiful poetry. And so I grew up with my dad constantly writing, and that kind of pushed me towards it.
That's awesome. Did he share his poetry with you when you were younger?
Yeah. He's always been very open about it. And he has a book of poems that he put together, and it's like one of his pride and joys.
Oh, that's amazing. Cool. So this is a bigger question, so feel free to only, you know, draw from a few things. But when you're writing, what do you draw your inspiration from?
I draw my inspiration from my just existence as a Métis woman growing up and what that means to be an Indigenous woman. But I also draw my inspiration from my everyday life, from, you know, going out, my interactions with people, my relationships with people, but also with my relationships to where I grew up in Northeast BC in Dawson Creek and Fort St. John, and that land there. I was very lucky to grow up with knowledge of the land and really raised in the bush for a while. And so that is a huge influence of it. But I also really like writing poetry that's definitely like, I'm a 25-year-old woman that does dumb 25-year-old woman things a lot of the time. And so I really like to put that into my poetry because I don't like to get too serious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it definitely shows. And I have some questions about the form that you use, which I'll ask a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But before we get to that, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your blog. So you have a blog online, as that's where blogs exist.
Yes.
It's called A Half-Breed's Reasoning. Mm-hmm. You primarily publish poetry, sometimes essays, other short notes. When did you start your blog, and what made you want to create this type of forum for your work?
I started my blog oh my God, like 5 years ago, I think. I like blogs because they're really accessible, and I've always thought I wanted to be an academic, and then I realized once I graduated that there's no way in hell I'm ever going to be in an academic, and I wanted my writing to be accessible and reachable, and so I decided to start a blog, and it kind of just took off from there. I started with mainly short essay, personal essay type things, and eventually moved into poetry. Because I'm more comfortable writing poetry, but yeah, it started from there.
Were there other blogs that you looked to for inspiration at the time?
When I was younger, I loved Lisa Charlie Boy's blog. It was called Urban Native Girl, and it was one of the first blogs I found that fused kind of a contemporary Indigenous experience. So she's like this really cool Indigenous woman who loves fashion and like stuff like that, but also, you know, talks about politics and what it's like to be an Indigenous woman. And I thought that was so cool that she created this thing that talks about all these really important aspects that affect our lives, but also, you know, is also very down to earth and incorporates things. It's like people think that if you're Indigenous, you also like that's all you are.
Mm-hmm.
And like you need to like write poetry about birds and resistance, and it has to be like this really political poetry, or this has to be this really political writing, but we're not allowed to like these other things. And so I took a lot of inspiration from that early on.
Totally. This is different, but in some ways similar. My experience I've had with hosting Fem Concept, which is 100% FemCon, which is, it's so easy to fall into the traps of interviewing women about like their experience being a woman playing music. And it's like, oh, your song's about love, or your song's about like the patriarchy and stuff. And I mean, that's important for sure, but it's really important also to not forget to just be like, tell me about your gear, or tell me about like all the other things that people ask male musicians that they somehow just think don't apply to you because they're only focusing on that one part of their identity.
Definitely, definitely. And I think, especially when it comes to Indigenous lit, people want you to write a specific way. Like they're looking for this weird like authenticity. Like if you're an Indigenous writer, like you have to write about the land, and you have to write about like your trauma, and you have to write about this. And if you don't write about this, and if you don't like mention like circles and ancestors and all this stuff, which is really important and cool and great.
Mm-hmm.
But like if you don't mention that, then you're like, you're not fitting into this like pigeonhole that people create for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I definitely like to be like, no, like, my existence is inherently political as a Métis woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I do come from a complicated history, both like in terms of like my ancestral history, colonial history, and my own personal history. And that does influence what I write.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I also have interpersonal relationships. I date dumb people, and then I do dumb things. And then, you know, I get sad and I write a poem, and here it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think your work does like one of the best jobs that I've seen of combining those things. So.
Thank you. Thank you.
Cool. So on your blog, you briefly discuss the reasoning behind the name, which is a half-breed's reasoning. And I'm wondering if you can talk a bit about that, just for anyone who hasn't read that part of the blog.
For sure. I always get at least like 4 angry emails a month.
Wow, really?
By people who are really upset that I'm using half-breed. And they're always not Métis people. And they're often just white people. Like, they're not even Native people, because, like, other Native people will understand why I'm using half-breed. And so I just get these, like, angry, like, that's not PC. And I'm like, go away. But the name for my blog was inspired by E. Pauline Johnson, who was a Mohawk writer in the early 1800s. These days could be totally wrong.
I think you're right.
I can like see my professors just being like, oh my God. She has this really amazing piece called A Red Girl's Reasoning that everybody should read. And so I love that piece. I connected to it. It's all about being an Indigenous woman and all this stuff. And I was like, you know, I'm a half-breed, so I'm going to call my blog A Half-Breed Reasoning. And half-breed comes from the historical term that was used for Métis people. We weren't always called Métis. We started to call ourselves Métis, but we were just identified as half-breeds. If we weren't a status Indian, you were a half-breed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where that comes from.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy that you get emails about it. I can't believe that.
It's wild.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's really great, and I think that it's great that you have the like segment that explains it, because reclaiming is like a complicated thing for a lot of, for any term that is reclaimed, right?
Yeah, definitely. And like I've like jokingly called myself a half-breed, and like with other Métis folks, like obviously if I know they're comfortable, because it's a really contentious mm-hmm. word, mm-hmm. and that is partly why I used it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Métis will not want to reclaim it, don't want to use it. And like it's not something I'm like super reclaiming, but it's just like a tongue-in-cheek, like
mm-hmm. totally. Yeah. No, it's good. So when you write new poems, you usually publish them on the blog and you post about them on Twitter and Facebook. So I'm someone who has no experience writing poetry, and I consider the act of putting it out into the world to be so brave, just because poetry is really intimate. And like you said, you talk about, you know, relationships and things that make you sad and all types of experiences that you have. I think it's an incredible gift that you share these with everyone. But I'm wondering, how long were you writing before you made that step to sharing with the world?
I've been writing, like I said, I've been writing poems for a long time, like since as little, throughout my horrible, angsty teenage years, which, Lord help me, if those ever come to light, I'll need to move and change my name. I think it was maybe a year and a half ago, I decided to publish my first poem, mm-hmm. and I was terrified because it's a very intimate form of writing, mm-hmm. and I also had to go through a huge process of like telling myself it's not lame to write poetry. Because I've been inspired by all these really amazing poets in my life and love reading their poetry. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, cool, I want to do this. And then I did it. And I was like, poetry's lame when I do it. And I was like, Kate, no, Samantha, like, deal with yourself. Like, it's not that lame. Mm-hmm. And so I went through a bunch of that. And then I was really scared because a lot of my early poems kind of are about just like a crappy relationship situation. And I was publishing them, and I was like, I'm putting this person on blast. Like, I can read these poems, and I know what they're about. This person can read these poems, probably knows what they're about. Other people probably won't, unless you know me. Mm-hmm. But I'm just, like, I'm literally just, like, airing my dirty laundry. Which I think is what is also kind of nice about being a writer. Mm-hmm. And I feel like sometimes people are a little scared because they're just, like, when am I going to be in a poem? What's it going to be about? And I always just, like, have to stop myself from writing a blurb being like, this poem isn't about you. If you think this poem's about you, you're wrong.
You're so vain.
And then I'm just like, this poem's probably about you.
Oh, so don't do Sam wrong, yeah, and you won't be in a poem.
Don't do me dirty, and I won't put you on blast.
I think, like, I can't imagine what that must feel like. Why do you think there's an attitude about poetry being lame?
I don't know. I know people don't think it's inherently lame, mm-hmm. and I've like found nothing but support from people. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's seen as like this like not a fully formed way of writing, and especially like being a woman poet as well. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, like you're never gonna be like the big male poets, or like what's the even point? Like poetry's dead. T.S. Eliot died. Like Robert Frost went down the road, like the path less trodden or whatever. Like it's done.
That's it. There's no more.
There's no more. Like, don't even try. And I don't know. I think it's definitely a feminized genre of writing for sure that's not given the attention it deserves. Mm-hmm. And I think in terms of it, it's just like it's made fun of a lot. Mm-hmm. And people, I also think there's this aspect that like it's really vulnerable and it's also communicating a lot of emotion. And that makes people really uncomfortable because it's a concentrated version of like what could be a longer essay, but it's also just like, here it is, here's 250 words that are going to just like punch you in the face, and now you have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And so I think it makes people uncomfortable.
Totally. Well, we've had conversations before, not on the radio, about how vulnerability is not a trait that is valued largely in our society. And I think that's so true. It's like poetry is just being very, very vulnerable, writing it and then sharing it on top of that, right? So mm-hmm. You mentioned that the support you've received since publishing has been online has been good. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, because like I said, when I first started publishing my poetry, I was absolutely terrified and just like expected no one to read it, like except my mom, which was also a whole new bucket of really scary. But people have been really supportive and like people have been reading it and I've had a lot of really positive feedback from folks. But I've also been supported by other poets in the community as well who are kind of like, you know, let's try this, or like inviting me into spaces. And it's really nice. It's really nice.
That's incredible. That's a really nice outcome of putting yourself out there.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Do you ever, when you're writing or releasing certain poems, do you ever give people, like if you include something about your family or something about a friend that, you know, might know it's about them, do you ever, you know, give people a heads up, or do you just kind of wait to see what comes of it?
There have been situations where some poems have been about some pretty intense stuff that's happened,
mm-hmm.
and I've passed it by the person being like, are you okay with this?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of my family, I never kind of veer into the territory where I think it would make my family super uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
And I don't want that. Like, mm-hmm. I have a firm cook'em rule in my head. Like, if my grandma can read it, then, like, it's okay. But that doesn't mean, like, I won't write poetry that, like, doesn't eventually push that. But there's just certain stories that I don't need to tell about my family,
mm-hmm.
That just don't need to be aired, and they're not my stories to tell. And so I definitely try and write my poetry from my own experiences and from my own place in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not telling stories that aren't mine.
Totally, totally. So I really like the way that you use form in many of your poems. So, and when I say form here, I'm not a poet. I mean the way, you know, you'll start on the left side and then move to the right, or, you know, use italics or bold. So some examples that I found just in, like, reading through a lot of the poems last night, or just, like, in learning the definition of unrequited, you use a form of going, like, step one, step two, step three, through step 10, and that's interspersed with a bunch of shorter thoughts. In Nia, you use, like, scene one, scene two, scene three. I'm going to try to say this, and I'm going to do my best. In Pagwesikan. You incorporate the recipe for bannock amongst other lines about love and family. And I'm wondering what you like about playing with these different forms and also how they come about in your writing process.
Definitely. I think I like to look at, this is going to sound so cheesy, like so cheesy, but I like to look at the words also as art on the page. And in, like, I feel like poetry, as much as it is an audio thing,
mm-hmm.
it's also a very visual thing. And I think when you're writing, or when I like to write, I like to use all the entire space I'm given. So
mm-hmm.
I'll go to the right margin, I'll go to the left margin, I'll go down the center. And I like to play with how the poem physically looks on the page, because it's a lot of fun for me as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I also feel like you can communicate differently when, if you're spacing things differently or you're putting it in the right margin or left margin.
Mm-hmm.
But the things like learning the definition of unrequited, actually, I was... from the title of the poem, you can guess that, like, I was dealing with an unrequited love, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
And I was Googling, like, how to deal with unrequited crushes.
Listen, I've done similar things. There's no shame.
Oh, in case you didn't know how sad I was. anyway, and it was, like, I found, like, a really funny WikiHow.
Oh, my God. I'm going to look this up.
Oh, yeah. It's, like, great. For sure. It's great. And I was just, like, dying reading it. And I was like, you know what? I like this, like, WikiHow form. And so often if I'm going through a situation, I'll, like, think of things, or I'll read other things, and that will influence, like, how the poem will look.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
That's really, really cool. It's great. When you write, does stuff kind of come out in a way, and then that's, like, Does it come out in that form when you write it the first time, or do you kind of move stuff around as you go?
I'll move stuff around as I go. I usually, it kind of just flows how it flows. Like, how you see the poem when I post it is probably how I wrote it the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'll change stuff around, but mostly it'll just kind of go how it's going to go.
Nice. Cool. So in your work and your writing and throughout your history with poetry, I'm wondering if there's other poets and writers that you look to for inspiration and what you admire about their work.
Definitely. There's, like, a list. Like, I early on was really inspired by Marilyn Dumont, who's a Métis poet, and she was one of the first books of poetry I picked up as a kid and read her poems and connected to so much, and they're so beautiful. And then as I moved on and grew up, I've been really inspired by Amber Dawn, who's a local Vancouver poet.
She's incredible.
She's incredible. So like Amber Dawn and Rita Bouvier and all these like really amazing like women poets. It's just like I do this thing like if I'm reading poetry and I find out it's like a cis man who wrote it, I get so angry. It's so like it's petty. It's so petty. But I'm just like, no, like, I just am not interested. I want to hear, like, the voices of, like, women and queer folks and trans folks and, like, specific, like, people of color and Indigenous people. Like, I don't need to read more poetry by white cis men.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way about music. I honestly, if I am looking for music for my show and I go to a band camp and the picture is just, like, four dudes, I don't even bother. Because the reality is that probably a large part of your life you've been forced to only take without even realizing it. And this is how I feel about music too, is that that's predominantly what you get is stuff that is created by like cis dudes, white dudes, you know? So they've had enough time. They don't need any more. They've had more than enough. Maybe too much, probably. I don't think that it's petty.
Good. Oh, I should also mention that there are two other young Indigenous poets, Billy Ray Belcourt and Erica Violet. I feel like that's not her real last name, but it's her last name on Facebook. Mm-hmm. We've been like Twitter and internet friends, and we met the first time like a few months ago. And I was like so nervous to meet her because I love her work. And it's beautiful, beautiful work. And then I met her, and I was, like, so scared. It was going to be so awkward. But it's, like we've known each other for so long because we've read each other's work and, like, been Twitter friends. It was great. But they're definitely two, like, young Indigenous writers and poets that are, like, I return to their work a lot. And I'm, like, I need something.
Nice. That's awesome. Cool. So the last question that I have is kind of, I mean, the current political climate in Canada and America is awful. And it's actually, I think people are maybe just waking up to how awful it's been because it's not like it just became awful. But I think art is a very important part of the resistance to this. And I'm wondering what it is about poetry that makes you feel hopeful or gives you hope when things don't seem, when things aren't so great.
Yeah. I love returning to poetry when things aren't feeling good or aren't really great or there's just too much going on, because it's nice to read someone else's words who you can connect to and who you can understand where they're coming from. It's because you can feel so isolated, especially like if you're a woman or if you're a queer person, you're a trans person or you're Indigenous or a person of color, you can feel very isolated in your existence. And so when you have these poets to reach out to and read their words and feel them and understand them and connect to them, it's a reminder that you're not alone in this. And so I like returning to poetry to as a reminder of that. I have like a stack of poetry books that I like return to for specific situations.
Nice. That's beautiful. Do you have any advice for people who are young poets starting out or maybe older poets?
I think my advice is just to write it and put it out there, even as scary as it is. And your first poems you ever publish and put out there are going to be so embarrassing. Like, I look back and I'm like, oh my God, Samantha, what were you doing? But then I'm like, no, you know what? I took a leap. I did the thing. It's getting better. It's just to do it, just to keep writing, constantly writing.
Cool. Is there anything else that you want to talk about?
No, I think we did a good job.
Cool.
Yeah,
me too. Thank you so much for joining me.
No problem.
I really appreciate it. And you are going to read a poem for us.
Yeah. I am just getting it up on my phone now. High tech. I was going to read Pugwais again because you mentioned it, and it's one of my earlier poems. It was from that not-so-great relationship situation era, and like you said, I was playing with a form of going through my auntie teaching me how to make bannock, and for anyone who has grown up making bannock, getting that bannock recipe is really hard, and it's often passed down from women in your family. And so it's going through my auntie teaching me how to make bannock and also through this relationship stuff. So Pugwais again. My auntie never told me what to do when he doesn't love you back. She did tell me to add melted butter to flour, mix with your hands until it feels like sand. My auntie never told me what to do when you want to crawl inside your own ribcage for protection. Add warm milk slowly. My auntie never told me what to do when he starts dating Munya Skoyawuk. Remember to always add a pinch of sugar. My auntie never told me what to do when moving on feels like regret. Mix the batter with your hands. My auntie never told me what to do when your love isn't revolutionary. Remember to never overknead your dough. My auntie never drew me a map to find myself again. If you overknead your dough, Sammy, it'll get tough. My auntie never told me that you can get lost inside another person. Heat the oil slowly. My auntie never told me that memories linger like ghosts in your bedroom. If you heat the oil too fast, Sammy, it'll smoke. You can't use oil if it starts to smoke. My auntie never told me that the promise of something that never was will haunt you even after you've learned to live with most of the phantoms under your duvet. We cut the dough like this so it cooks evenly. My auntie never told me that sometimes, often, vulnerability isn't always an act of decolonization. Fry to light brown. My auntie never told me that our strongest forms of resistance are saying no. Serve warm. My auntie never told me that our survival depends on loving even after we've given all of ourselves away, with butter or lard and honey. But she did tell me that frogs dive deep to survive the winter. That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You are certainly welcome. It was a pleasure, and I look forward to continuing to read your work and seeing you perform again.
Oh, yeah. On March 18th. Me and another person are organizing a poetry show at the Toast Collective.
Amazing.
It's called Poetry is Bad for You. March 18th at 9 p.m. at the Toast, $10, pay what you can. No one turned away. Me and a bunch of people are reading some poetry, so it should be a great, vulnerably emotional, awkward, and funny night.
That sounds so great. I cannot wait.
Cool.
Well, we will. And for folks who want to read more of your poetry or get in touch with you, how can they do that?
You can read more of my poetry at halfbreedsreasoning.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. It's a train wreck.
It's an incredible Twitter account. I will say personally, as a Twitter user, I vouch for it.
And my Twitter is just at Sammy Marie.
Great. Okay. So, cool.
Thank you.
You are listening to International Women's Day programming here on CITR 101.9 FM. That was an interview with Sam Nock. Sam is a poet and writer based in